The year that Kate Braestrup's book, her book on being a game warden chaplain in Maine, called Here If You Need Me, was published, she gave an interview to the New York Times describing her feelings as her young son enlisted in the military. In the article, she talks about how Zachary, her 17-year-old, one day casually mentioned to her that he had invited recruiters from the Army, Navy, and Marines to come to the house to talk with him about signing up. They explained that his mother would have to be present because he was underage. Kate said that would be fine. Quote, I wore my best vegan-dyed peace T-shirt, she said. And though wary, I wasn't worried because I knew the sight of blood made Zachary gag and his favorite hobby was napping. She said the Army representative talked a lot about opportunities to see the world that joining the service would offer. And the Navy man tried to reassure Kate that the Navy had really low casualty rates. And the Marine Corps recruiter said to Zach, why should I let you join my Corps? Zach surprised his mother when he answered that question by saying that he wanted to be a Marine because he wanted to learn to work hard. The recruiter assured him there was every chance that that would happen. Zach completed his first tour of duty and then he reenlisted. Kate is proud of her son and she hates war. She worries about him, and then when she sees how proud he is of being a Marine, she cries. That's how a lot of mothers and fathers feel when their children join the military, proud and terrified, sad and glad at the same time. We are proud of the young men and women who choose to serve. We are proud of the greatest generation and of all the veterans in all the wars who risk so much and sacrifice so much. But like Kate, we have no appetite for war. The writer Andrew Carroll initiated something called the Legacy Project to honor American veterans by seeking out and preserving their wartime correspondence. So I am going to read several letters from this wonderful book called War Letters, beginning with a letter written by Major Dr. William Child to his wife after the Battle of Antietam during the Civil War in September of 1862. How many patients, I do not know, but 7/10 have suffered amputations. No one can begin to estimate the agony after a great battle. We win a victory throughout the country. The masses rejoice. But if they could see the thousands of poor, suffering boys dying, their rejoicing would turn to weeping. Who permits this? To feel that a power is in existence that hurls masses of men against each other in deadly conflict, slaying each other by the thousands, mangling and deforming their fellow men, is almost impossible. But it is so. And why, we cannot know. God preserve us all. And this from Camp Meade, Maryland, April 1917. Dear Mother, this is the proudest day of my life. We leave for over there tonight, and I am thankful I can take place among men who will bring freedom to the world. I do not want you to worry about me, for I am coming back. Keep the home fires burning, and we will come marching home, our mission accomplished. This is a man's game, and there is going to be a long line of Huns at roll call in hell for breakfast. P.S., put this number down someplace and don't lose it. You will need it to get my insurance. Private Lester Hensler, age 26. This from Benning, Georgia, just before deployment to Sins, Germany. January 1945. Dear Mom, for the 9th time, thanks for the package. Please don't send me any more underwear, socks, or even candy. And the milk of magnesia was absolutely unnecessary. They are teaching us to kill. You probably shuddered. Well, Mom, I don't like the idea either, but we know it's for our own good. We are learning jitsu. I'm afraid I'll never be an expert at it because I can't bring myself to go at this in earnest. I've left out many gory details. So long, Mom. From Belgium, U.S. Army 2nd Division, December 1944. Written by Private First Class Richard Cowan to his mother on his 22nd birthday. Dear Mom, I guess 22 years ago was a pretty important day for both of us, but after all, it was only the start. It's easy to see nothing's changed. It means everybody shares the same universals, hope, love, humor, faith. Being 22 is a chance to hit everything, no holes barred. Pretty convinced I'm grown up, ain't I, Mom? Well, I still count on you tucking me into bed when I get home. Private Cowan was killed in the Blitz of Luxembourg. And from Nagasaki, 19-year-old Keith Lynch writes to his parents who live in Crabtree, Nebraska, 6 weeks after the attack. The main part of the place in the other valley, about the size of Lincoln, I'd say was completely inundated. To think that a 30-pound bomb, the size of a basketball, exploding 1,000 feet in the air, could cause such a holocaust. I shudder to think what these people underwent when the blast occurred, a blast that dissolved homes and families and friends, a blast that pushed over huge steel structures a mile away as if they were made of blocks. This is a city with no buildings, no trees, no facilities, and no people. There is nothing for the people of this dead city to do but walk around and think, what manner of people would do such a thing to us? I wondered what they thought as they looked at us while we were driving by. Are these the barbarians who did this? What can we expect now that we're at their mercy? I found out my enlistment expires next March. Here's hoping. Your son. In the last letter, this from a mother to her 19-year-old son on the anniversary of his death near the Cambodian border in 1968. It's from Teresa Davis of Quincy, Mass. Dear Dick, you were my firstborn. With your laughing eyes and mischievous grin, you stole my heart. I'll never forget when you were 12 years old, you stood so proudly beside me at the cemetery as they played taps for your dad and they gave us his flag. My darling son, you tried so hard to be a father to your younger brothers and sisters, but you had to grow up so fast. I so miss you. They gave you the Silver Star. Now they call me a Gold Star mother. I spend time with other Gold Star mothers, every Monday night when we go to the homeless shelter for Vietnam veterans. As often as we can, we go to the Vietnam Memorial in Washington. And when we see one of the vets there having a hard time, we give them a hug, tell them it's not their fault, and that we're glad they're home. When I go to the wall, it's almost as if you're there with me. Each time I run my fingers over your name on the cold granite wall, I feel the warmth of your laughter, as if you're saying, it's okay, I'm here. I will forever hold you close. You'll always be my firstborn, my shining star. Love, Mom. There are over 150 letters in this book. I will let you read the other 144. As Andrew Carroll says, they poignantly convey the human cost of war and the scars that wars leave. And at the same time, they also convey the resilience and the compassion born of loss. As promised, I want to close with the beautiful passage from the novel as Hannah begins to come out of her grief. He writes,
There have been times then and later too when I thought I would cry forever, but I haven't. The living can't quit living because the world has turned terrible and people they love and need are killed. They can't because they don't. The light that shines in the darkness calls them into life. It calls them into their bodies and into the world, into whatever the world will require. It calls them into work and pleasure and goodness and beauty and the company of other loved ones. At first, as the months went by, it was shameful to me when I would realize that without my consent, almost without my knowledge, that something had made me happy. And then I learned to think when those times would come, well, go ahead. If you're happy, then be happy. No big happiness came to me then, but little happinesses did come, and they came from ordinary pleasures in ordinary things. The baby, sunlight, breezes, animals and birds, daily work, rest when I was tired, food, strands of fog in the hollows of the early morning. I began to trust the world again, not to give me what I wanted, for I saw it could not be trusted to do this, but to give unforeseen goods and pleasures that I had not thought to want. End of reading. I have to think that has to be the great challenge of all of our lives, to understand and accept that we can't trust the world to give us what we want, but at the same time to understand that we still need to be open and to be grateful for the goodness and the beauty and the love that does come. So let us honor the creative force of life, protesting always against all manner of form that would harm it or take it away, and let us celebrate the never-ending possibilities that life ever brings. So may it be. Amen.